Hello, you there. Oh, I just messed that up, didn't I? And we're live.
What? Live.
Well, yeah, live. What's live? Hello there, you amazing people out there. Welcome to the Amazing Action Comics Podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I'm one of your hosts, Angel, with John Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
God, that fucking sounds awful. Your name sucks.
I heard the hiccup there. It was like Charles Barkley's hitch when he's playing golf.
Yeah, like, listen, yeah. I don't even watch basketball and shit, but I hear the Knicks do very well right now. So, and I can't remember the last time they were doing well.
Well, you know what? I'm a bad fan because I don't know what happened last night. Did they?
They won.
Oh, yeah, so they they're all right. So cool, awesome.
They clinched their spot, right?
No, because I think they were down. Like they only won one game, right? This was like if they lost last night, they were out.
Oh fuck! You know what? We better stop talking about sports because it's just going to give us away.
And I'm like the son of a sports guy, and he's a big Knicks guy too. This is embarrassing.
Which makes it even fucking worse. all right, gang, welcome to another episode of the Indie Comic Review. This is episode 109. We do have a couple of books for you this week, and these books are from the week of May 11th in the year of our Lord 2023. But I think Phil just wanted to go over something really quickly before we get into our reviews, and then we'll hop right into it. Shoot for it, bro.
Oh yeah, thank you. I was all hyping up my side gig, my side podcast, the Pep Talk, the Mount Olympus Podcast Network on Blog Talk Radio, with Marty Appel. So I was like, oh, baseball fans, Yankee fans, come check out Marty and listen to us talk about all that stuff. And it didn't happen. There was something, some skirmish, some shenanigans at Mount Olympus. The internet, lightning bolts were flying around. The internet got knocked out for the weekend. So we couldn't record the podcast with Marty. So we have postponed that to June, and I will let you guys know. So thank you for giving me that moment there, Angel.
Yeah, no, no problem.
Plug my other girlfriend.
You live in like the worst area because you have like garbage trucks that go down and take out power lines and your internet service goes out. So
This wasn't me. Like, look, I got this little like shack, this yurt at the base of Mount Olympus, right? There's this whole Mount Olympus podcast network, and that whole internet went out. You know, someone threw a lightning bolt in the wrong direction. This was not me this time.
Okay. Cool. Well, as always, thank you guys for joining us so that you know what we do every single week. Phil and I just take out independent books off the shelf that kind of catch our eye, and then we just give our 2 cents for them. At Amazing Action Comics, we just don't only make amazing comics. We actually like to review them as we read other people's work, and we like to see what else is out there and give you guys a heads up at what you should pick up from your local comic shop. So we're going to dive right into it because you have this big ass gorilla that's just showing me her vagina.
it's a guy.
It's pretty beyond.
Oh, is it? I think. I don't know. It's with there's a theme. There's a theme. Well,
wait, I had to see something. Is that Thor climbing up Kong's leg?
So Kong likes blondes, right? And the only thing I could grab really quick is a Thor action figure. So that's what's going on there. He's holding it.
This is Thor calling himself Jane Foster?
Andaro. Andaro from the movie, King Kong. This is what I'm representing here in my makeshift
fantastic
way here. So, yes, what a great segue. Though, so,
yes. All right, go for it.
Yeah, this is the Empire State. I broadcast on a ledge outside of the Empire State Building. That's what all this Art Deco thing is behind me.
All right, fantastic. This is getting away from me really fast. All right, so the first book of this week is Kong, the Great War. Go for it.
King Kong, the Great War. This is by Boom. I'm sorry. No, not Boom. That was the previous Kong stuff. I'll get to that in a minute. I'm a dope. Dynamite. This is from Dynamite Comics. And
wait, so before you continue, I just need to understand, because I probably need to do research on this today, but Dynamite has bought a shitload of licenses recently, right?
Right. So this is why I made the mistakes, because in my research on this book, there's a little bit I want to talk about background on this book. This is based on a thing called King Kong of Skull Island that was created, illustrated, co-written by a guy, Joe DeVito. And it is a fully sanctioned sequel/prequel to the King Kong movie and then novelization from 1932-33, and it is fully sanctioned by the Marion C. Cooper estate, right? That's the guy who conceived of King Kong, the giant gorilla we all love. And so, so previously there were comic books that were, you know, within this world, that this expanded universe for the original King Kong that Joe DeVito started. And those were being published by Boom. But yes, now Dynamite has acquired a whole bunch of new licenses and sanctioned stuff. So usually the Boom comes after the Dynamite, right? But Boom had Kong first, and now Dynamite has it. And along with, you know, a bunch of other stuff they've recently, like with the Edgar Rice Burroughs estate sanctioned Lord of the Jungle, the Tarzan book that they can't call Tarzan. Right. Title, but that is also sanctioned as well by the estate of the creator. So that is the first bit that I kind of wanted to talk about, this King Kong the Great War, because I was trying to like figure out, picking it up, where does this fit in? Is this the newer Kong movies, or is this the original, you know, flavor King Kong from 1932-31 or whatever? And so what this is part of the original Kong movie continuity. And the other thing I want to talk about, because I'm going to do the creator credits now on this. This is written by Alex Cox, illustrated by Tommaso Bianchi, colored by James Devlin, lettered by Taylor Esposito, edited by Matt Idelson. And the one of the big things besides this, you know, because I actually have not dipped my toe into any of the Kong comics that have come before, but this one drew my eye because this is another creator that I actually know, another St. Mark's Comics alum, just like Jeff Zorno, the illustrator of Community Vigilante. Alex Cox was a manager at St. Mark's when I worked there. He went on to open up a comic shop in Brooklyn called Rocket Ship, which it was an independent comic-focused comic shop. Which was such a great thing at the time. And they had a lot of great events there. It was just a great store, ran for a few years, but is still remembered to this day. There were more than one customer at Joker's Child that I was talking to about Rocket Ship. They remembered Rocket Ship. So Alex really made an impact on the indie comic scene there. And it didn't stop there. After Rocket Ship, he went on to do a lot of things in the comics industry and is currently the director of direct market sales for Image Comics, and is still writing, hence this King Kong the Great War from Dynamite. So Alex is probably one of the greatest advocates comic books there is right now. And everything Alex has done has been in the service of getting people into comic books. He wrote a book on how to run a comic shop that is full of, you know, valuable and indispensable information. Alex is a great guy. I would say that Alex is probably one of the most knowledgeable people about comics and pop culture that I have ever come across. And weirdos like me kind of aspire to the knowledge that Alex has, as well as the love and the advocacy that Alex has for comics. So Alex has been doing some great work. Alex, keep up the great work. If you're listening, we would love to have you on the show just to talk about all the stuff that you've done. But right now we're going to get into King Kong the Great War. And this takes place in 1917. And basically you have a group of German U-boat, soldiers, sure, who basically are something happens and they are stranded on Skull Island, which is the home of King Kong. So this is about, you know, like a decade and a half or so before the actual movie, which is really, really cool. And it kind of it really reads like a movie on paper, you know, which is a really neat thing for comics and a strength to Alex's storytelling, because it's paced really well, and it moves, but it doesn't move too fast in some places, it doesn't move too slow in others. It just has a really nice even pace that keeps you engaged and interested throughout. So it's very cinematic. There's great tension that is built as you are anticipating seeing the big guy for the first time, and it is a great payoff. So yeah, this is a great opening salvo to the King Kong the Great War, and I really look forward to seeing more of this. And you know, again, there's great tension build, great action beats in the middle, and a great way to get to know the participants in this story, because it is a bit of a heavy cast, because you do need that cannon fodder or that Kong fodder. So as they get picked off one by one, you know, it's going to get more focused and more tight. But, you know, you are engaged with a lead character who, you know, does help get you, you know, the narration really helps pull you through and kind of feel what this guy is feeling as he's going through this experience. So Alex, great job. Wonderfully illustrated by Tommaso Bianchi. There's some great covers by Jay Lee and Brian Hitch did the main. I got the Brian Hitch. There's a really cool sketch headshot by the guy who kind of originated this extended universe for the original Kong, Joe DeVito, which is a really nice profile sketch shot of King Kong. So any format you get this book, nice. King Kong, The Great War, I highly recommend it.
Cool. All right. Wonderful. So you enjoyed it. Are you going to keep with it?
Absolutely. I'm going to keep with it. I have to say, of the three books I read last night, this one is actually, I remember the details more on this one. I read them all three like late last night after the long day of work. And that's the one that really, I didn't have to like go back and flip through just for this review, right. Just to remember, like it just, it all, and I guess it wasn't overly wordy. And again, it was just had this great cinematic pace that really stuck with me. So.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And the only reason why I mentioned the whole thing with Dynamite was that, you know, they're really expanding from their usual catalog. So like with the whole Disney thing with the Darkwing Duck, the Gargoyles, now Disney Scar, you have Maleficent coming on shortly. And then you got this Kong book and the Lord of the Jungle. Yeah, they're really diversifying and they're just getting a bunch of licenses, which is outside of the norm of what they usually, you know, like the Red Sonja, Mortal Red Sonja, Umbrella. All the hot chicks that wear just like loincloth or freaking almost nothing.
Yeah, and guaranteed a photo cover. Guaranteed a photo cover on those books. And again, I am really disappointed there was not a photo cover for this King Kong book from Dynamite. So.
Oh, man. We were just
I see you, Dynamite. I see what you're doing.
It's all good. All right.
Discreetly hidden by a banana.
That'd be great, right? With like little pasties on his nipples.
like that the Burt Reynolds centerfold, right, where he had like the puppies all like covering his naughties.
Dude, that would be an awesome cover if Kong took the same position. That'd be great, just lying on like a dinosaur rug or something.
I think it's real, but wait, a really quick tangent. I think Stan Lee did a riff on that, and covering his naughties was a copy of the comic Giant Size Man Thing. I think that's a photo that is a real thing that was done as a spoof on the Burt Reynolds thing.
That's fantastic. All right, guys. Kong, the Great
War. But Stan would say he did it first. Comics.
Yeah, sure. Check it out. All right, we're going to move on to me. So I have a book that Phil did not read this week, Keepers of the Cosmos. So what I've been doing, actually, is I've been diving into the previews catalog every month. And, I mean, there's tons and tons of publishers. And right now, you know, we're going to step back a little bit and we're going to talk about distribution a little bit. So there's pretty much three main distributors that distribute comics to comic stores. Back in the heyday, there were a ton. And if you were really active as a store owner, you would be ordering copies of the same book from multiple distributors because you didn't know if you were going to get your books at all that week. Or some distributors might be closer than others in that sense. So once a creator creates a book, hooks up with either a publisher or self-publishers, they'll have their book distributed through a distributor. Really fancy word for just saying that they're going to get your book into a comic store. So Diamond Comics is one of the biggest distributors. They were the biggest distributor, the last 15, 20 years? Because they were the only one.
Yeah.
They pretty much gobbled up everybody else. And we're just the sole monopoly, if you want to call that. So any comic book store that wanted to get books had to go through them. Over the last couple of years, we had some disruption in regards to who can actually provide books for certain companies. So we had, I believe, DC was the first one to break off, right?
I think during the pandemic, I think that was, that was the comeback, was not with Diamond. It was with...
Right. So they ended up with two distributors. Eventually, it just became one, which is Lunar. So Lunar has the sole exclusive rights to distributing out DC books, but they also distribute out independent publishers as well, and they're starting to draw a little bit more attention to them and distributing more as they're building their infrastructure to be able to handle more publishers on their end, because the logistics behind it is, as you can imagine, can be quite daunting, especially when you have a company as big as DC, as many titles as they have coming out, and you know, and as many stores as order, one of the main two. And then Penguin, Random House actually brought on Marvel, and then they brought on, I believe, IDW next, and I think Dark Horse is with them as well. So they're distributing those three publishers primarily, and then Diamond has everybody else, which pretty much falls under just either Image and then other publishers. That's right, right? Because I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. So basically what I've been doing, is I've been going into the previews world, which is Diamond's book that they solicit every month of everything that's coming out within the next 2 months. So it's always 2 months ahead that you're ordering books or looking at things that are coming out in the previews. And because there's so much content, unless you're really like hands-on store owner, you're probably just ordering from the main two. And then if anybody special orders anything from the previews catalog, you might carry one or two other things. And they're probably going to be from Image or a more well-known publisher. Now, the problem with that is because there's so much content out there. There's so much content that's missed each time in previews as well. So we don't get a lot of stuff on the shelf because obviously there's only so much real estate. So what I've been doing every month now is I've been diving into previews, and even Lunar's catalog, which is, what is it called? I forgot what it's called, but their catalog is only online. And I've been, because they have some publishers that aren't on Diamond, right. And they've got some pretty unique stuff. And what I'm doing is I'm venturing out and just trying to expand my wings and, you know, get things that the store might not get. And so this is one of the books that caught my eye that we didn't get at the store. We got one copy. And guess who has two thumbs and got that copy? This guy.
Expanding, and I know what you're doing, because you've definitely been, there's some stuff you have been picking up that is like really kind of out there and beyond the ken. This is like, just based on this cover, I'm like, this is a safe, this is like dipping your toe, right? This looks familiar, but it's not what it is, right? It's not what it looks like. All right, that's all I want to say. Go on, you read the book.
But it's also, you know what? All right, so we don't want to judge a book by its cover, but all we get to see are the covers in the previews. So you're making judgment calls all the time.
I think the book. So when I looked at the cover, by the cover, Angel.
Yes, but when I looked at the book, I thought it was going to be sort of like made for kids, and I was okay with that because there's not a lot of books that are made for, you know, that pre-teenager, you know, pre-adolescent age, where that's, I think kids really need to they really need to start hopping onto comics. So what drew me to it was sort of like the art style of it seemed more kid friendly or kid inviting.
Right.
With that being said, got it, picked it up. So the art, let me go over the credits. So this is written by Adam Barnhart, art by Agung Priboyo. I know I butchered that name. Colors by Viviana DeChara. And letters by Letter Squids, which I'm assuming is the house. So the creative team on this, there was some really clever stuff that was in this book that I liked as far as design concept wise. So the interior page where you have the credits is made up like it's, I'll show it to you guys, for those of you guys that are actually watching us. It's right here, right? Can you see that? It almost looks like it's a computer loading up. So it has sort of like that MS-DOS language. But it's talking about credits and stuff that's loading in regards to the artists and all that stuff, which is pretty, I thought it was pretty neat from a design perspective. I like to look for stuff like that because it gives me ideas for what I can do and what you actually can do in comics, which is pretty much anything. There's some design things that were going on in here that I really liked. The art is really, really clean. And like I said, for me, it felt more like it was drawing in more of that younger crowd. Because the line art was so clean, it almost reminded me of Big Hero 6 kind of art.
Okay.
Not quite manga or anime, but just like really clean, and like it would be an animation, a cool animation. When I read the solicitation and I read the book, it threw me off because the last line, I'm just going to read the last line of solicitation. It says, Rick and Morty meet Invincible. Mm. However, when you look at the cover, that is 101% Guardians of the Galaxy.
oh, is that what that is? Oh.
Yeah. I mean, you got the big bear in the like back, something. Which is Drax. You have Star-Lord. You have Gamora. I mean, you're probably missing...
I would think the guy, the teddy bear looking guy, I'm like, that's Rocket. If we're going to do this,
because he's too big.
He's too big. Yeah, but then you go on comparison, he's like... I thought the little guy under fake Nebula was Drax, and then the little green bean guy was your Groot.
I mean, if you wanted to, you just by face value, judging the book, you can do that. But as you read the book, you understand what characters are which. But basically, gotcha. You have these keepers of the cosmos, like Guardians of the Galaxy, who lost a team member, which is, what's his name? Is it Lemon Drop? Yeah, his name is Lemon Drop. So you got this big horned bear that's called Lemon Drop. And he's been missing for about, I don't want to say missing, but gone for about a year because he stole some money from the keepers and now has been, you know, taken by this evil warlord and is about to be killed. And he finds a way to communicate to these guys to see if they can come save him. So this book is pretty much just a setup for the next issue, which is them going to go and save their friend that they haven't seen in quite some time. It's a really good issue in regards to setting up new character development because it does take a while. I mean, you're looking at about 32 pages or so of just introducing all these characters and this world, which to some degree I could appreciate and we haven't seen for a while. Because a lot of the times you're trying to get so much story into those first, 32 pages to try to get the reader to come back. But there isn't a lot of back content on the characters. So when you're dealing with a group of characters that need to interact with one another, you need to really understand their personalities. You need to understand what their motivations are. And I think this book did a good job of doing that in regards to the different personality types in there. Is it my cup of tea? It's probably not. I don't know if it's me or I just didn't gravitate towards it. It could be for that younger audience when I'm looking at it, but it doesn't read for the younger audience. So there's where that disconnect for me is.
Gotcha.
In that respect. So I think if it had a more, I think like a rough style to it, say if you put like a Jorge Jimenez on the book or even Dan Mora on the book, I think it would look completely different and the words would resonate with what you're reading as opposed to reading something that's a little bit more adult, but yet looks a little bit more cartoonish. In that respect. And I guess you could equate it to, going to a Disney movie and, watching a cartoon, but there's jokes in there for adults that they can get. So if I'm going to equate it to anything, it would be something like that. But I think that's where my disconnect was with this particular book. But not to say that it was bad at all. I think if you like if you like Guardians of the Galaxy, this might be right up your alley because it is a teen book. And right now they're setting up to go save their buddy in the next issue. And then I guess whoever that evil warlord is going to be the particular baddie for this particular arc. So I'm not sure if this is ongoing. It doesn't say or if it's a mini. But yeah, I mean, good luck to this creative team. They put something together really, really well. I think if they do it right, they can definitely pick up an audience on that book.
I really like what Scout Comics does because they do a lot of things like this that are sort of retro, evocative, of that sort of, I guess, bronze to modern age, a lot of 70s, 80s, 90s feeling books. And this feels like this falls right in line with that. A lot of their stuff, I feel, is like sort of self-contained and does a lot of really good world building within its own. I noticed that had a thing at the top saying that it was a Riotverse
book. Riotverse.
So, I think Impossible Jones is one of the ones that they do that I really thought the world building and extended characters in that book were really great, really fleshed out, and a lot of fun. So I'm wondering if that is also part of the Riotverse or if this Riotverse is a separate thing. But I do like a lot of what Scout does, and that just feels right in line with what they do. And I'm glad that it's better than the cover, and that that it's something that is
because. You said it. I mean, it has sort of like that Silver Age kind of feel to it. So I think it, I wouldn't go as far as Kirby-esque, but it rings sort of like that type of era book. And whether or not they were going for it on purpose is another story. But yeah, I mean, there's always some good stuff that you can pull out of something, and yeah, it's a good story. So cool. Hopefully it works out for them. All right, moving on. So let's move on to your next read, because this is from Boom Studios.
This is from Boom, because Boom comes after the Dynamite. All right, so this is Ghost Lore. And welcome to the Amazing Action Comics weekly Cullen Bunn indie comic number one review show. Because this is written by Cullen Bunn, illustrated by Leo Max. And that's L-E-O-M-A-C-S. It's Leo Max, not Leo Max.
Okay, nice.
And yeah, I don't know. That's kind of neat. And colored by Jason Wordy and lettered by Ed Cullery. No, it's lettered by Ed Dukeshire. And in the middle, there's a sort of a flashback sequence that is in it's not called out within the story. You could tell by the art change and the story beat change. But in the credits page, it is called Unfolding. And that's illustrated by Brian Hurt, colored by Bill Crabtree. And it is edited by Ramiro Portnoy. And the executive editor is Eric Hairburn. So yeah, this is really neat, man. This is again Cullen Bunn right in his wheelhouse. He gives you really solid, believable characters that pull you in. You know, you have a father who is the head of a congregation. You know, he's a priest. And he's got a wife. He's got a kid, a younger son who is all of a sudden stopped talking, and an older daughter who is just, you know, fighting with him all the time. And there's family strife. There's a car accident. There's ghosts. There's actually a car accident because of a ghost. And then you kind of get a flashback sequence that is very evocative of Stranger Things, as far as, you know, you kind of have this odd girl out. She's being bullied. There's a sort of flayed skin monster that is revealed, and almost like a curse put on the town, right? And then you kind of get this concept where, because this is a 12 issue series, so you kind of get this setup that you're going to follow this main family, the two of these main characters, and alongside that you're going to get the stories of the ghosts that are now just basically out in the open and visible to at least one of them. That almost like this curse is going to have her. I don't want to say curse, but I think more will be revealed as it goes on. So this idea that your main character you're going to follow is also going to be hearing these ghost tales, this ghost lore, as you go through the series. So I think that's a really cool concept. It's like an anthology within a main story. And I always like that. I like when a main story diverges and then brings it back under some umbrella. So I really like that format, if that's exactly what's going to be going on here. And I thought this was a great first issue. It was the two different art styles work really well together. There is a spookiness and an immediacy and a roughness to the present day scenes. And then almost like a glowing, because of the color change as well, but sort of like a softer, cleaner line look at the past. And it's a recent past too, and even though the events that happened in both the present and this you know, few months ago interlude are both horrific, in many ways, the art style, the art change, I think works really well to keep you engaged in this story. So yeah, another really good one by Cullen Bunn. I really dug this, and I think that this is a lot of fun, a lot of good stuff going on in this, and I really look forward to seeing where this goes.
Cool. So it is a horror book, yes?
Yeah, it's a horror book. Because again, there's sort of, there's the monster element, And then there's the ghost element as well. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of spooky happenings going on. But again, there's this really solid, relatable, in a lot of ways, family drama to kind of keep you grounded, right?
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Wonderful. Yeah. Ghost Lore from Boom Studios, guys.
I do want to put... Yeah, I want to point out, I did get the one of the variant covers that I just thought was really cool. I kind of, you know, I always like to get a main, but I sprung the extra dollar because I like this cool little effect on this one. So it's like you got the church, right? You got the guy in the door, right? The dad and the priest in the door, a little lightning behind, and then boom, look at all them ghosts. Look at all them ghosts. What kind of stories do they have to tell? So, yeah.
It looks like a good Gideon's Fall cover. Okay, before we get into our last book, I did just want to talk about one thing because a series just did end. I think it ended on a 5, right? Which was really weird for Mark Millar. But The Nemesis Reloaded. Holy crap.
It's good.
It was such a good payoff. Yeah. So
I heard about the setup.
Oh, dude. So yeah, so we're talking about world building, universe building, and Millar's, you know, has so much in his library. In regards to content out there. And you've probably read or seen any of his stuff, either on the small screen, big screen, or in the screen. Comic shops. Yeah, medium screen. So, yeah, Big Game.
Tiny screen.
Is going to be... Shut up. Big Game is going to be his big event book that's going to bring all of his characters into the universe of Millar World, which is fantastic. And not just old content, like freaking Kingsman, Kick-Ass, but the newest stuff,
Wanted,
too.
Right? Wanted is in there.
Wanted is going to be in there, but you got Nemesis is going to be in there. Superior is going to be in there. Freaking even his Super Crooks guys. What's the latest one that we have with the three guys, the three kids that are vampires?
Nightclub. Nice.
Yeah. So all this stuff is coming in together into
Kick Ass, too, you know, right? And
Yeah.
And
Jupiter's Legacy.
My favorite Mark Millar universe world, whatever it is that I like to mention, is the Marvel series 1985. I love talking about this. So this is this takes place in the Millerverse in 1985, and most of it's in and around a comic shop. And an event happens that the Marvel Comics characters of 1985, like Black Suit Spider-Man and, you know, that whole era, Jim Rhodes, Iron Man, they bleed into the Millerverse, the real world of the Miller world of 1985. And that is part of that universe because there's superior posters, like they talk about the superior movie. I think there's some, you know, ancestors of characters that appear later. So I always thought that was a really neat trick that Mark Millar did by doing a Marvel book that tied into his Millerverse book.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, so he's clever in a lot of things that he does. I mean, he sold his entire library to Netflix, so good on him. But yeah, so I'm really interested because, you know, I think it's the first time that he's going to be doing this. I'm pretty sure he's had characters cross over in regards to, like, what you just said, poster-wise. So we've seen posters of different characters in other characters' titles where they would have been fictional in that world. But now all these worlds are going to kind of collide with one another. And I'm interested to see how he's going to actually do that big event. And I think it's supposed to be like across 24 titles. So we're going to see how that's going to go. Hopefully it's not a hot mess. But I really enjoyed Nemesis Reloaded. If you ever read the original, this is sort of like, I always compare it to like the evil Batman. But you can see the similarities, but you can also see that there's no similarities at all. Because this guy's just psychotic. He's rich, psychotic. And has the unlimited resources to do what he wants. But you also see the genius in his planning. And what I really appreciated about this particular series is sort of like, all right, you knew his motivations throughout. So basically in Nemesis Reloaded, he's trying to get revenge for his parents' deaths. And he knows who's killed them. So we know that eventually one or two things are going to happen. Either Nemesis is going to die. Obviously he's not because it's his book. Or he's going to take out everybody that he wanted to take out. And so like a James Bond movie that we've seen 1,000 times, but we'll see 1,000 more. There's a certain formula that you follow that you just know that you're just going to be drawn to. You know what the outcome's going to be, but it's not even the outcome. It's that journey to it. And Mark Millar does a really good job of creating this journey that you want to stay on, even though that you know at the end of Titanic, that ship is going down. You want to stay on the ride.
I haven't finished it yet.
Shut up, bitch. You want to stay on that ride to figure out what led up to that huge event. And so that's what I got out of this book. And I was like, holy fuck, the way that he ended that book was fantastic, because he got his revenge, but how he got it was fucking great. And then it kind of sets up what's going to be coming down the road, which is the big game event, which I'm really excited about. So yeah, if you guys haven't read it at all, I would definitely pick up the first one. It's in trade. You'd really appreciate it. And the second one is just as good, so you won't be disappointed. So if you're sort of like that anti-hero, psychotic, you know, Batman Who Laughs, Zernar, I guess, would be the closest to what he would be. So if you like those type of characters, I would definitely check it out.
Frank Miller and Jim Lee's all-star goddamn Batman and Robin. That's like, yeah, that Batman. Yeah. That Batman's like harsh, man. He makes Robin eat rats.
He's an asshole. All right, cool. So we're going to move on to our last book here. This is something that both Phil and I read. I'm going to start this one. So this is Something Epic, and it's published by Image Comics. So this is written and drawn by Simon Kredansky. So he did a run on Spawn, which mm-hmm. was sort of like that nightmarish Spawn sequence that we had for a while, where Spawn was becoming a horror book for a bit. And he also did a stint on The Punisher that I read as well, which was pretty cool. I like his art style. I gravitate towards it. Yeah. The lettering was done by DC Hopkins. So yeah, if you don't know his art style, it's more of a painted art style. So I would say really close to like Liam Sharp, who did Green Lantern, who was doing that Starhenge book recently that you reviewed that book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you were liking it for a while. And then I believe he did a horror book that we reviewed a while back.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the title. Yeah, it was good.
Town Called Terror.
Thank you. Yes, that's exactly it. Because I was confusing it with West of Sundown. But yeah, Town Called Terror. Another great moody artwork in that. That was really good stuff.
You know what? And that's the great word. His art is moody. There's a feeling and an atmosphere to it that you can't help but elicit an emotional response from what you're seeing. It's like going to a museum and looking at a painting and sort of having like this visceral response to the painting, because it just seems mm-hmm. sort of like surreal, or you can kind of like relate to it. And so some of the art that he does, his art style is like that. It was really cinematic to me. A lot of the panels moving from one to the other almost felt like you're watching a real spin-off of, you know, an old movie. Mm-hmm. Camera, which I thought was really, really cool. And then sort of like what he did with the Image Comic Presents, Simon Kredansky, Something Epic, just kind of hidden into the panel, mm-hmm. but making it part of it was really great. All right, so what do we have here? So basically what we have is a kid that's being born, and there's a lot of internal monologuing going on in his book as far as the setup. So you have this kid named Dan who has this ability not to see dead people, but to mm-hmm. see this parallel universe of the imagination. Mm-hmm. And basically this coexists in parallel with real life. So basically all the things that people can imagine create sort of like this parallel world. And only certain people called epics can see them. And he's one of them. And basically what we're doing is we're following him on his explanation of being able to see this world for the first time, how he interacts with the world, but yet he feels so alone because he can't speak to anyone about what he's experiencing because no one else can see what he sees. Until, but I won't ruin it, .. So you get this whole journey through this entire book of really understanding. And I think what, you know, Simon did really well here is try to give it some groundness and reality by talking about energy and mm-hmm. how it cannot be either created nor destroyed, but yet transformed, and how everything that we create, like to say that imagination is real and tangible, because they're part of the electric impulses that we use to either create them and or store them. So that visceral response that we get in the brain with, you know, the connection of these electric impulses that allow us to interact in our own reality are also responsible for the ones that, you know, trigger our imagination. And with that being done, you create this parallel universe where all those things that we imagine exist, whether they're terrifying or horrible, or whether they're epic and, you know, superhero, anti-superhero. And I like at one point he's going over these characters and their different names and, you know, what they are and who they are and how he doesn't interact with them because he knows it wouldn't be a good thing, but yet he admires them from afar.
One might make him a sidekick. One might make him a sidekick and he would die.
Yes. But it's funny because it did sort of have like that sixth sense kind of feel to it. But we're not dealing with ghosts and we're not dealing with, you know, demons and stuff like that. Even though we are, but from an imagination perspective, not from a paranormal perspective. And he spoke about those differences within that book. So it was really interesting. It's a really interesting setup and a really interesting concept. And I'm sitting there and I'm reading like halfway through this book. And it just dawned on me that the parallels of reading his words and what I was actually doing myself. So we think about it, right? So we have sort of like, no one can see what he sees. No one can experience what he experiences because there's no medium for it. No one else can see it, right? So he has nobody that he can experience it with. So I'm thinking, all right, as a writer and as an artist, I've got this stuff in my head as well that no one can see or experience because they're not in my head. All of a sudden, that medium comes to life through comics, and now I have people that I can interact with in that imaginary world. So I just found the parallels between what that kid was experiencing, what Simon was writing, to what we were actually experiencing while we were reading the book, because he was inviting us into the imagination world through the medium of comics, where in the book, this kid needs to find somebody else that experiences what he experiences so they can experience that together. Yeah, it was really unique. It doesn't fall under like a superhero category at all. It doesn't even fall under horror. I found it really intriguing, and I found it really like, holy shit, I want to read the next issue and see where this is going to go. Because there isn't any, if you think about it, there isn't any antagonist right now. The antagonist is the unknown, which is no one can experience what he experienced. And even if he does find somebody, will that person become an antagonist, or will they become a partner to what he's doing? And then will there be an evil baddie kind of thing? So it's so weird to read a book that doesn't have a clear bad guy at all. But just a setup to a really unique story. So, yeah, what'd you think about it?
I thought this was something else. I mean, everything you said, you know, I totally agree with. I thought this was such a beautiful looking book. A lot of times, you know, early artists who go into writing, they kind of overuse words in a lot of ways. They're like, I want to prove that I'm a writer, so I'm just going to jam pack this with just a lot of text, a lot of dialogue, a lot of narration. Not a single word in this, I think, is a wasted word or a throwaway word. It everything is in service to pull you into this story, to pull you into this kid's head, to pull you into this kid's experience. And what this is the artist's experience. You know, this is a kid who has a hyper real imagination. He can see everything that has ever been imagined, right? And exists with that. And how does he channel that? He channels it by drawing on the page. And he's now creating. He's now adding to that energy pool, right? He's now, you know, transforming that and making that manifest, you know. And yeah, looking for somebody else who experiences the same thing that he does. The way that's revealed is both amusing and touching, right? And interesting. And then the whole dynamic with him and his mother and what she's going through and how he processes that. This feels really personal, but also universal. And it's just, it is so beautiful. It is, there's a lot of love in this. And I like the use of public domain characters that he can use. Like when he buys a book, right? Mm-hmm. It has, you know, he's got Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and the monster's face is manifest out of the book. Same thing with Dracula. And then, you know, and so he's able to do that, but he's also able to weave in, you know, characters that are evocative of analogs of characters that we know, like the Daredevil analog or the Dragon Ball analog, you know. So a lot of this for me feels like Ready Player One, but without the video game aspect, that this is all something he's seeing in the real world, right? Sort of like, and it's funny because it's like same thing kind of happens in Ghost Lore. Then the good counterpart in Ghost Lore, it's somebody who can see all the ghosts in the world and that's around them. In this, it's somebody who can see all of the energy that is created by the spark of, or that is contributed by the spark of imagination as real around him, and he can interact with it if he chooses to. The other thing I thought that was amazing about this book was no ads, and the story runs all the way through to include the back cover, which is a really interesting thing, because one of the first things you do when you pick up a book is you flip it over just to look at the back, and there's the last panel of the book with a to be continued on the back cover. And I think that that's, I don't know, that's a neat trick. I think that that sort of makes you want to jump ahead. You know, it makes you jumped ahead to the end. If you've done that, now you're like, well, I got to read it. I got to see what that means. That is good. I really dug this book. I really can't wait to see more of this.
Yeah, we're almost halfway through the year. And I think this is the first book that I picked up that I thought was really unique in regards to storytelling. And then just sort of like this mastery and art education, because there's this beautiful like centerfold panel where you have sort of like these hands being drawn, but it's a big collage of just like dynamic poses. Yeah, I don't know. It was just really, really good. And, you know, just the different art style that he uses for sort of like the different characters that you were talking about, like the Dragon Ball Z guy. I mean, there's like animated characters in here too, like a Blue or Yogi Bear kind of character, the Duck character. And they're all drawn differently. Even like the 8-bit Ninja Gaiden. Thing character. So there's really, really good. So it's not just really, you know, the same art style throughout when it comes to like the imagination of a parallel world, because if you think about it, everyone's imagination would be different and how they envision that, and him being able to, you know, see other people's creations and then be able to depict that on the paper was fantastic. So this by far I think is one of my favorite books of the year so far in regards to its originality and its concept. So yeah, we're gonna see what Simon does with this. I mean, I've seen his art in the past, so I know I'm not gonna be disappointed there. It's just gonna be a matter of whether or not the story pays off in the end. Because for me, I've gone back to all the books that we've read so far, and I can't freaking find a book that doesn't have an antagonist in it.
That you clearly
know. I mean, Phantom Road would probably be the only one that I could think of, but because you don't have one antagonist, you have sort of like this parallel world that they're dealing with.
The landscape is the antagonist.
So in that sense, but here we're just, you know, it's really unique and weird, but I love it.
Yeah, because what he sees isn't necessarily antagonistic. I mean, he even has he has two Draculas in the attic, you know. My two favorite kind of Draculas, a Dracula and a cat Dracula. And so he you know, and his relationship with them is fine. He's like, they used to scare me at first, but now, like, you know, I just they're fine, you know.
Here's what's funny, and this is what I didn't get in that particular instance. And I don't want to go off too much, but so he's leaving the cat food, but is the cat food for them?
Yeah. I think it is, because don't they go to eat it? Or or is there like
I know, because Dracula says something about there hasn't been a stray in forever.
Right.
So I don't know if there was a real cat that he was feeding and it's just not being fed anymore. So for me, is the parallel world, can he interact with it? That's what I didn't get in that particular instance, because there's no other interaction at all throughout the entire book. So it's little things like that that I try to catch. And I'm just, I don't know if there's an interaction between that fantasy world, the imagination world, and the physical world.
Is it something he just does as a sense of normalcy, a sense of routine?
Yeah. Yeah. And no, especially when you're dealing with a single parent.
Single parent and a, you know, absentee parent a lot of times apparently. Right. And again, all this imagination made manifest around you, that the, and it's an excuse to see them, but not interact with them. You know, and maybe that limit, if I see them every day, then I know that this is still happening to me. You know, I don't know. I think, maybe hopefully more will be revealed, but yeah, maybe that is, it's just almost changed the sense of normalcy and this insanity that is around him. Great stuff.
For sure. I'm going to. Yeah. All right, guys, check it out. This is my favorite read of the week. Something Epic by Simon Kardesky, published by In the Comic. You may want to check it out. But we did have some great stuff this week. So, yeah, make sure you review and go and support your local comic shops by picking it up. All right, so what do we have?
Woo!
Next week.
Woo! Cowabunga!
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You still haven't watched it yet, right? You're going to wait till like the last second to watch this movie.
I'm going to finish it at 1:28 p.m.
on Thursday. Son of a bitch. You know what? That's fine, because it'll be fresh in your mind. Yeah, so this week's indie comic movie review is going to be the original Ninja Turtles. We may talk on some of the modern stuff. Well, I may talk on it, because I know Phil has not seen it. If it came out after like 2020, he hasn't seen it at all. There's no movie he's seen.
Definitely mention Vanilla Ice, no matter what.
Oh man, maybe we'll play some Vanilla Ice until we get kicked off of YouTube.
We're gonna dress like Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, so we're gonna talk about the original.
We're gonna dress like Vanilla Ice for Ninja Turtles.
That'd be great. So the original comic, the original movie. We won't talk about you know what? Secret of the Ooze wasn't bad. That holy fucking third one. We're going back to freaking ancient Japan. Holy shit. And then the two iterations that came out afterward, and the numerous animations that have been on. There's a new animation that's coming out for it as well that looks really, 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 really good. It's almost sort of like in that, now I don't want to say rotoscope, but it's definitely more like the way that Miles Morales, the new Miles Morales Spider-Verse stuff, was kind of shot. There's some hints of that in there, and I really like that style. So, yeah, we'll talk about that next week.
They've made Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoons? That's a thing?
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing to make a cartoon out of.
You're an asshole. All right, guys, we're coming to the end of our podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe to the podcast. The closer we get to a million, the more that me and Phil can retire. Oh, I keep saying Phil. God damn it. John can retire. So, yeah, one day we'll be able to retire. If you are a creator and want to promote yourself and or a project that you have coming up, whether it's a Kickstarter, whether you got something that's being published, and you want to come on a show and talk about it, we'd love to have you on. Just go to AmazingActionComics.com/podcast, fill out the form, and we'll look at getting you on a show. Yes, go to AmazingActionComics.com to stay up to date on everything that we got going on. Everything's moving slowly but surely, because that's how life works when you're in the independent life. But we got some great stuff coming down the pipe, and I'm really excited to be sharing a lot of that stuff that's coming out soon. But just make sure you visit the site to stay up to date on any information that we got going on right now. As always, please visit and support your local comic shops. We love these guys. Without them, we wouldn't be able to go into our parallel world of imagination. I almost started singing a freaking Willy Wonka, but we're gonna go there. So do that. Phil, where do you get your comics from?
Well, I get my comics at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. And I got to say, man, we were talking about Free Comic Day about to happen last week, and Free Comic Book Day happened this past Saturday. I just want to thank all of the people that came out to The Joker's Child. Regulars, new folks discovering the store for the first time. I want to thank Batman for being there. I want to thank all the old staff that came to help out, and I want to thank all the new folks that came to help out as well. We could not have done that without the help that we had going into and on that day. And most importantly, I do want to thank Len and Karen Katz for creating The Joker's Child and giving us a place to go to and let our nerd flags fly for the last 35 years. And, you know, God willing, if something magical can happen, this store's got another 35 years at least left in it, even though it's an industry that is intent on trying to destroy itself from within. But man, come and support us. Come and say hi. Give us high fives. Buy comics, buy statues, buy toys, not only at your local comic shop, wherever you may be, but come on down, make the trip to the Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey, the last comic shop on earth.
Oh, soon to be. Wonderful. All right, gang. As always, we love having you. Until next time, please be amazing, stay amazing, and read something amazing.